Of the new European Super League. The Prime Minister will be speaking with fans and governing bodies later about the Super Six planning on joining the competition. Speaking on BBC Breakfast, pundit Alan Shearer says he hopes the negative response makes the clubs think.
When you look at the reaction of the last 36 hours, common sense would tell you that these clubs will have to go away and think.
Boris Johnson will be hosting a coronavirus press conference this afternoon. It's after India was put on the travel red list yesterday with concerns of a new variant of the virus. The murder case against a former police officer, Derek Chauvin, over the death of George Floyd has gone to the jury. 12 jurors are now starting deliberations in Minneapolis. And thousands of tulips have burst into colour in a kaleidoscope display. Belmont Nurseries is the UK's largest commercial grower of tulips. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Olivia Mouncer.
Now we're gradually coming out of lockdown, we can go to more places, like pubs, restaurants, hairdressers and gyms. However, around one in three people who have COVID-19 have no symptoms and are spreading it without knowing. By quickly checking into venues with the NHS COVID-19 app, you can help stop the virus spreading and protect your family and friends. So whenever you go out, check in. Let's take this next step safely.
This is Colourful Radio.
Everyone can now get free rapid COVID-19 tests twice a week. They show your results within 30 minutes. They also show you're doing what you can to protect your loved ones, your friends, your workmates, and that you want to keep life moving again. Around one in three people who have COVID-19 have no symptoms and are spreading it without knowing. That could be a friend, a relative, a workmate. It could even be you. Rapid tests are easy to get from nhs.uk/get-tested. Let's take this next step safely.
Were you persuaded to buy solar panels with assurances they would pay for themselves or even make you money? If those promises haven't come true and you bought your panels in the past 6 years with a loan from Barclays, Shawbrook, Creation or Ecano, then you may be entitled to thousands of pounds in compensation. At Solar Claims UK, many of our clients receive their settlement within 4 weeks. So text SOLAR to 60777. Text SOLAR to 60777 now. You don't need a claims management company to make a claim, and if unsuccessful, you can refer it free to the Financial Ombudsman.
Did you know that just 1 hour of your time can make someone else's day?
I could not have got my fried plantain and jollof rice without you.
I could not have got to my medical appointment without you.
I could not have got my medication without you.
And that's exactly why the NHS Volunteer Responders Programme needs you. Volunteers are urgently needed to help those most in need during the pandemic. The time needed to volunteer is flexible and on your terms. Volunteers need to be 18 or over and own a smartphone. Help others and support your community. Apply online today. Sign up to become an NHS Volunteer Responder by registering at nhsvolunteerresponders.org.uk.
Live on digital radio, colourfulradio.com and apps. This is Colourful Radio.
Twinkle in your eye, and I know thinking that we'll see it through. And I know, gonna be all right. It's gonna be all right.
It's gonna be all right.
Ooh. All right.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to Owning It with Iola. I am, of course, your host, Iola, and welcome to part two. Today, I'm excited to interview the wonderful Tolu Frimpong. Tolu Frimpong is a money coach, blogger, and YouTuber. So after finding herself in over £36,000 worth of consumer debt, she decided it was time to turn around things herself. After studying many books, videos, and podcasts about personal finance, she was able to pay off her debt within 2 years. So since becoming debt-free, Tolu has made it her mission to help other people achieve debt freedom too. In her debut ebook, How I Paid Off £36,000 Worth of Debt, she outlines the 10 steps she took to achieve debt freedom. Tolu also hosts a show on Instagram called Team Money Talks, where she is joined each week by a special guest to discuss taboo money topics. So without further ado, it's an absolute pleasure to invite Tolu onto Owning It with Iola. It's so good to see you talking about this all-important topic, which we'll get into, of finance, especially during the lockdown, especially now, you know, because people have been struggling, and you're sharing some really great information. So, but before we get into that, Tolu, share with us a little bit about your journey, you know, your career background, and how, you know, sort of what you did out of uni. Did you go to uni? Let us know a little bit about Tolu's background.
Okay, so my journey. So yeah, I did go to uni to answer that question. I went to uni years and years ago now. Gosh, I don't even want to say the I graduated. I actually studied marketing at university, and funnily enough, one of the modules in which I did was accounting and finance, and that was a module that everyone had to do in the business school, regardless of what you were going to actually mainstream in or major in, sorry. So financial accounting was one of the modules that I actually failed, and that's how much I hated maths and hated numbers back then. I just didn't even do the work. I didn't try to pass the exams. So funny, fast forward how many years later, that I actually now ended up in a personal finance space. Like, if you had told me that 10 years ago, this is what I'll be doing today, I would have been like, no way, me, numbers, we don't mix. But obviously life experiences, being in so much debt, getting out of that debt, realizing the importance of having to know how to manage your money and being in control of your finances, that's kind of led me down the path I'm on today. And it's like, I realize now that finance is something that we have to deal with whether we like it or not. So do the best you can do to kind of make sure you're doing the best with your finances. And yeah, having gone through my own personal debt journey, I'm like, okay, I've learned so much along the way, and I really want to do my part to help as many people on their own financial journeys. And that's kind of how I've gone from being in marketing, spending over 10 years building my career in that field, to now switching over to the personal finance space. So it's funny, like, when being in the niche that I'm in now, in the industry I'm in now, because my background isn't in finance. So it's like, when you have guests on, usually they'll be like, oh yeah, I've been working in personal finance for 5, 10, 15 years. And it's like, no, that's not actually my background. It's life experiences that kind of led me down this path. And so my journey with personal finance and my experience in personal finance is based on personal experiences and things that I've learned personally along the way that have helped me, that I know can then in turn help other people on their journeys as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I think that's actually even better. I think sometimes, you know, we have, preconceptions about engaging with financial services, which I'll ask you about a little bit later as well.
Sure.
But, you know, it feels a little bit more comforting knowing that somebody's been through a journey and they kind of have a relatability. So I think you've got the edge, actually. And also because what I've noticed as well, I started looking in on YouTube, there aren't that many black British females, in this space. I've only really discovered them more so through your channel, actually, because you started doing, the collaborations. It's obviously either mostly Americans or, male dominated. So it's absolutely brilliant. But yeah, so you came from a background of marketing, which had a component of accounting, which you didn't enjoy at all, and now you're here all the way into finance. But as we're speaking about the journey, so to speak, and the life journey, I want to know a little bit about your are you aware of the term money blocks?
So
we'll talk a bit about that, but I want to know firstly what your relationship was like, or what kind of things that you heard growing up, because I think that those really form our subconscious money blocks. 100%. What were your the stories that you heard then of money growing up?
Okay, so going back to my childhood, I'd say that money was hard to come by. That's something that I learned from a very young age. And that's not something that my parents actually told me, like money. Actually, to be fair, they did tell me that, because they used to always say, money doesn't grow on trees. But more so, I learned it through experiences. So wanting to go on a school trip, for example, and my parents just say, no, there's no money for that. There's no money for this. Or wanting to go on a school trip and not even bothering asking to go on that trip, because I just know that the answer will be no, because there's no money to do it. And then also seeing my parents work so many different jobs, like working in the morning, evening, after, like just working non-stop. So it's like I realized they worked really hard, but then the money wasn't there to measure up to the amount of work that they were doing. So I think growing up subconsciously, that taught me that money is very hard to come by, and that you have to work really, really hard to get any kind of money. And even then, it's like you don't get lots and lots of money. So the idea of being able to like build wealth and all of that, just growing up, didn't even seem like a possibility, I would say. And I think that also made me not very good with money when I finally came into my own. So when I turned 16, as soon as I got my national insurance card, I was like, yeah, I'm getting a job. I couldn't wait. Like literally, I got my first job within a couple of months of getting my national insurance number. And then when I would get paid on a monthly basis, that money, I would blow it. Like the way I would spend through that money was like somebody was going to take it away from me if I didn't spend it. I would blow through all of my money. And that was how I was with money when I was young, because I'd been so used to not having it. When I used to get it, it's just like, it's burning a hole in my pocket. I need to spend it before I lose it, or before I don't get any more, kind of thing. So I'd say that was what my relationship was. So I think money scripts that I had, or money mindsets, what was the term that you used actually? Money blocks.
Yeah.
I think that money is so hard to come by, money is scarce. I think. And money also is a cause of problems. I think that's something that I used to think as well. Like money seemed quite negative, because there was always, that was probably the biggest contention in our household growing up was money. So because of that, I just used to also always, should I say, associate money with issues. Like money was always problematic. So I guess, I didn't have a positive relationship with money, I would say, growing up.
That's interesting. I mean, you work so hard to get it, but then the thought process we don't realize is so important, that we can, my previous guest, she was getting the money and then wasn't able to keep hold of it. So it works both ways, in terms of that block. It can stop you from actually keeping hold of it as much as you work hard for it. So that's interesting. So I really wanted to kind of understand that, and I understand that you know, your journey has seen you reading a lot around the subject of money and studying money. What would you say your money mindset is now?
Yeah, so it's literally a reprogramming of my mind. So I have money mantras that I would say to myself on a regular basis about money isn't hard to come by. So it's like reprogramming my mind, rather than saying all these negative things about money. It's like now I'm adopting new beliefs around money proactively. So it's like proactively I'm telling myself, no, money isn't hard to come back. There's an unlimited amount of money outside there for me to get. Like, I don't have to settle for one stream of income. So it's just literally telling myself all of these things and reaffirming it to myself on a daily basis. And those are the kind of things that I've been doing to kind of reprogram my belief. And I think also seeing is believing. So when you see it, you believe it's more likely to happen. So filling myself with positivity and filling myself with examples and role models of people that are where I want to be, and seeing their journeys and seeing them able to achieve those milestones that I'm aspiring to achieve. It gives me that motivation and that hope and that encouragement as well to know that, okay, if they're doing it, then there's no reason why I can't do it. I mean, they don't have two heads. The only difference is they don't give up. They keep going. They persevere. They put in the work consistently on a daily basis. And that's something that I've been taking on board on my own journey too. And I've just been literally, like they say, success leaves clues. So I've just been literally following those clues, following in their footsteps. And I'm like, yeah, don't worry, Tolly, you're going to get there. So I might not be there now, but best believe a few years down the line, I want to look back and be like, wow, Tolly, look at what you've been able to achieve. Because even now, if I look back on my journey from when I was in all of that debt to just today, I've come so far. So if I've come this far in the space of 3-4 years, then only God knows where I'll be in the next 4 years if I commit to the journey.
Absolutely. We'll talk about goals and financial goals in a bit, but firstly, as you just mentioned about the fact that you got into so much debt, which has brought you on this path of sharing with other people how not to do what you did, or how to get out of it if they have. Share with us from the beginning about you. We've got time. About your journey in terms of, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, you got into, I think it was exactly £36,300 worth of debt. And I actually found that quite interesting in itself, that you actually mentioned the 300, you know, that knowing the numbers is so important. And I love the fact that you were so precise in, you know, noting the number. It wasn't just 36,000, it was 36,300.
Yeah.
So please tell us how you managed to get into that, how long, you know, over the period, how long it took, and then obviously taking us through the story afterwards, how you got out.
Okay, sure. So in terms of how we got into debt, it all started basically, I'd been married to my husband for a number of years, and we decided that we wanted to get onto the property ladder. And we ended up moving back in with my in-laws for a period of time to save up money in order to buy our first property. So we had saved up enough money for our deposit. We'd saved up for the stamp duty. We saved up for surveyor fees. Like, we had saved up for everything that we thought we needed in order to buy this property. And eventually we was able to save up all the money we needed, and we had all the funds, and we found a dream house. Well, I wouldn't say dream house, but we found a house that we could afford to buy in the area in which we wanted to buy it. And we put in the offer, and the offer was accepted, and everything was going smoothly. And then there was just a lot of issues that occurred with the people that were selling their property. I don't know what the issues were. There was just fighting between the two people that were selling the house, which meant that it took another year between the time that we had our offer accepted and us finally doing the exchange. And in that time, a lot of damage was done to the property. I don't understand what they were doing to that house, but it was a mess. It was a total wreck, and a lot of work would have needed to be done to it to make it even habitable. Like, literally, the kitchen roof had collapsed. Like, it just, it was a mess. I don't understand what they were doing, to be honest, but it was a mess, and it was a
Were you able to get any or negotiate any money off of that?
We didn't even try to do that because, again, you learn a lot through experiences. So hindsight, we probably should have done that and probably just gone elsewhere, to be honest. But because we just really, really wanted to buy the house, and it's been a whole year later, so house prices have gone up by a year. So it was like that was what we could afford with our budget. And if we pulled out, we would have had to save up for longer to then afford another property in the same area. So it was like, no, let's just go for it and we can fix it up. So we're like, okay, let's do this. So then we had a great plan. At that time, my husband had been watching Homes Under the Hammer, and he had been seeing all these examples of people basically doing work to a property, renovating it, adding value to the property by adding a room to the property. So splitting up a room to make it 2 rooms, for example, and increasing the property's value. So it's like, yes, it all sounded good. He had a great plan. We're like, okay, we can do this. And then we had a plan that we were going to get a loan, basically take out a loan from the bank in order to pay for these refurbishments. And we would then get two lodgers in to then pay, offset the cost of the loan that we had taken out from the bank. So we're going to get these lodgers in, they were going to pay us, and everything would have been fine. We would be paying the mortgages ourselves, and then they would pay for the loans. And we'll do that for a couple of years until the loans are paid off, and then we can continue on with our lives. So that was all of that.
That was a good plan. That sounds like a good plan.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And that's why I like to talk about it now to other people as well, in that it's great to have a plan A, but you also need to have a plan B as well. It also needs to be a contingency plan.
Right.
And I think that's where we fell short. We didn't have a plan B. So on paper, when we were strategizing, it made financial sense to us. And then what also happened actually is, so we took out the first loan. Yeah. That wasn't enough. So then we needed to take out a second loan. And then once we, so we ended up taking out those two loans. Those were the bulk of the debt. But then in addition to that,
how much were those? How much were those in contribution to the debt?
In total, they came up to about 16K of the total.
Okay.
Exactly. And that was the big part of the debt. But then we ended up acquiring even more debt, because I think what tends to happen when you find yourself in a hole, you just kind of dig a deeper hole. And that's what we ended up doing. So we went from having those two loans and we then had our overdrafts, which we started maxing out. We then started using credit cards, and we went on holiday. We was furnishing the house, like buying things that were way above the amount we should probably be or paid. But when it's not your money, it's easier to spend it, is what I found anyway, was our experience. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think because we were in such a financial mess, we just made it worse for ourselves, because we couldn't see any way out. So we just started, you know what the heck, just keep on going. And that's what we kind of done. And then on top of that, what went wrong, which we hadn't factored into the equation when we were doing our forecasting at the beginning, was we weren't able to get those two tenants. So we weren't able to get lodgers, because what we didn't find out at the time is that people didn't want to live with a heavily pregnant woman with a toddler. So at the time, I was about to give birth to my second son, and I just had my first one at the time. He was about two at the time. So it was just hard to get anybody to rent out the rooms. When people would call up and they would hear the child in the background, they'll be like, oh no, don't worry, we don't want to see it. And so we tried that for about 6 months, and we weren't able to get anybody to take the room. So we're like, okay, this isn't working, let's just forget that plan. So then what that meant is that we now had to pay those loans out of our own pocket on top of the mortgage. And the loan repayments at the time were about £500. And that was just for the loan repayments, not even including the mortgage. And then on top of that, I went on maternity leave. So we went from having two incomes to one income. So all of that is on my husband's shoulders now. So it just was a mess. It was literally
a lot. Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, that's how we end up in all of that debt. But if you had asked me back then how much debt I was in, I would have probably said about 22,000, maybe 20 to 22,000 pounds. I didn't even anticipate or realise how much debt we had actually got ourselves into until we began this whole debt-free journey process. Because it was only when we actually sat down and took stock of the numbers, wrote down how much we owed and everything, that we realised how bad it really was. Like, we knew it was bad, but it was even worse than we could have ever imagined. And the reason why we actually started on that debt repayment journey was because of a book by Dave Ramsey that we came across called The Total Money
Mindset. Yes, I've seen you've been mentioning a lot of books. Was that the instrumental book
that was the one.
So say the title again. Which one was it?
The Total Money Makeover.
Okay.
By Dave Ramsey. Yeah, that's the book we read. I know at the moment Dave Ramsey's getting a lot of negative press, but I can't fault the man for what he did for us on our debt-free journey. So I'm like, that book definitely changed the game for us. So I have to mention it every single time, because that was the book that my husband read that basically showed us a way out of our financial situation. And then he's told me about the book. I read it too. And that's not like me. I don't read books. Or back then anyway, I didn't read books. So when I read that book, it was revolutionary for me. I was like, wow, this is it. We need a total money makeover. And that's kind of how the whole debt-free journey began.
Okay, so your husband read this book, then you read the book, and you thought, we need to do something about this. So you're now applying the, you know, the lesson of, you know, of learning from other people and you know, educating yourself. So the financial literacy came in, and you know, to help you on your journey moving forward. Excellent. Okay, so as you're coming out of this debt, and or even before that, you know, I've spoken about, you know, before, obviously the impact of financial debts and money worries. You know, it's actually a real reality, especially during this time You know, this last year has been very difficult. People have been furloughed, people have lost their jobs. On the other side, some people have started up new projects and have started new ventures and have pivoted. That was the key word of last year. But how did it affect you at the time in terms of your personal self, like your personal stress, did you have any anxieties and things like that? Because it can really have a massive effect. I think I've seen that you've spoken about this in one of your videos about dealing with the stress, but how did it affect you and your relationships?
So at the time, from the outside looking in, you would have never known that we was even in that financial position. So we were very good, or shall I say, I was very good at putting on that facade and, you know, just faking it till I made it. So from the outside looking in, you would have never known that I was struggling financially. And that's what I did throughout the whole time when we were in debt. And also when we was on our debt-free journey, we just kind of kept it within ourselves and kept it to ourselves and just did what we had to do to pay off that debt. But it was hard because I couldn't be open with people and they didn't know what we were really going through. It was more of a suffering in silence kind of thing. So it was like, obviously we knew what we were going through and we were stressed when we were at home behind closed doors. But for everybody else, they just thought everything was fine as it had always been. And that's because we didn't show any other side to it. But I feel like if I was going through that debt-free journey right now, I think it would have been very different because back then there was distractions. I could distract myself from my financial situation. I could distract myself from the pressures that I was actually under. Whereas I think being in debt right now or during the last year would have been a very different reality because it's like there is no distractions. There's nothing to kind of take my mind off of my situation. I would have just been stuck with my debt and realizing how bad my situation was. And I think it would have been a lot harder to get through it if it was last year versus a few years ago, for sure.
But it seems like you both as a you and your husband were quite open about, you know, obviously the situation. You were having ongoing conversations, you were learning together. Yeah, you were learning together. What advice would you give to anybody that's listening that might be, you know, because it does affect personal relationships, you know, what advice would you give to them for themselves and for managing the situation in terms of a family?
Yeah, I'll definitely say be open with your family and loved ones, like people that are close to you, that you can trust, that, you know, genuinely have your best interests at heart. I think it is really important to have those open conversations because obviously in retrospect, I wish I had done the same when I was on my debt-free journey, because I think a problem shared is a problem solved. While they're not going to be able to pay off my debt for me, but having that listening ear, having that sounding board, having that person that can kind of encourage you and, you know, tell you it's going to be okay, you can do this, kind of cheer you on and champion you on and motivate you, I think it can definitely help you a lot on your debt-free journey. So like since I started my account and joined the debt-free community online, so on Instagram, there's a community of people that are on debt-free journeys or just on financial journeys in general. And it's called UK Debt-Free Community. That's the UK version. And Debt-Free Community UK, those are the two hashtags that you can use to kind of find similar accounts sharing that kind of content. And it's like, I love that community now. Even though I'm not in debt, I still take so much inspiration from people in that community and just seeing people at different stages of their journey, people that are currently in like £50,000 worth of debt, and you see on a daily basis the what work that they're doing and the things that they're doing to kind of pay off that debt and chip away at it, it's just so encouraging. And even on the days where they post about the fact that things aren't going to plan or they're having a down day or having a low day, people just literally rally around them. It's like literally a community type vibe, and they come behind you and they're like encourage you in the comment section, like even send voice notes. I've done it to people and people have done it to me as well, like send you voice notes, send you words of encouragement. And it really just helps you knowing that you're not alone, that there is support out there, that there's people on similar journeys. I think that's another thing as well, to realize that yes, you're in debt, but you're not the only person. Like literally at the time it feels so isolating. You feel like it's only me here. It's only me that's done this. Like, I'm such a failure. I'm so stupid. Like, literally, these are the kind of crippling thoughts that I had when I was in debt. But then when you join these kind of communities, when you speak up about it, you realise that actually so many other people are in similar positions. And I think the more we talk openly about it and we kind of break those stigmas around debt, I think the more people can actually experience that financial healing.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, it's nice to see that, you know, there has been an uptake in talking about finances generally across the board, particularly with, you know, young families, young Black women, especially. I've seen it's a really positive thing to see, having the conversations openly and, like you said, building these communities. So you got yourself in the debt, you and your husband were working your way out of it. What were some of the steps that you took Did you guys approach any, because there's a lot of charities that seem to be popping up now. I don't know if they were as active before. I'm sure they were. Were there any sort of external
services
that you approached?
Yes, no, funnily enough, I didn't. Well, it's not really funny, to be fair. But no, I didn't at the time approach any of these services because I didn't know that they were available. And that's another thing that I talk about now on my page, the fact that there are services available, like Step Change. They're a debt relief charity. In fact, they're one of the biggest in the UK. And they offer offer fee-free advice, so they don't charge you anything. And they can literally, they have different advisors that can literally listen to your situation and offer you the best advice to kind of help you on your debt-free journey. So even things like reaching out to your creditors, people that you owe money to, they can help with those conversations so that maybe some of your debt can even get written off. I didn't even know that could happen. Like, these are things I'm finding out after I've paid all that debt back. But if I had these conversations, if I knew that these services were available, then I could have taken advantage of them. So those things are definitely out there. The information is out there if you're willing to do the work to find it. But the worst thing to do is just ignore that situation. Definitely look for those resources. Look for those advice. Step Change is fantastic. And there's so many other different ones that you could reach out to that offer that advice without charging you anything, and then offer that support on that debt-free journey.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, we started off talking about the mindset and how important the mindset is. Do you think that maybe your old mindset of maybe having those blocks and maybe having it contained within your family was maybe like a more of a thing that you were trying to protect yourselves rather than going out externally, because you didn't even believe there was any help available, although there's, as you said now, you're aware of being in the community that there are these agencies that work on behalf and they don't even charge you. Do you think that had an effect on you reaching out? And do you think that's something that people are experiencing in the community as well? Because specifically, Black people, I find, we don't want to talk about these things. It's a massive, massive taboo, I think, probably even more so than other communities. I don't know if you feel that, but...
No, I think it's definitely a taboo subject. I think for us, the reason why we didn't speak about it is because you don't want people to have a negative view of you. So I think it was more what other people would say and how other people would react to our situation. That's kind of what kept us from sharing it externally, because people have a perception of you. You create a reality that this is how my life is and this is the kind of person I am. So opening up about those kind of things, it reveals a certain part of you that you've tried to hide for so long from people. And I think that was a big reason why we didn't speak out about it, because at the time, like I said, I went on holiday. So it's like, you're going on holiday, but you have all this debt that you haven't paid back. It doesn't make sense. So we knew that. We knew what we were doing, that we knew the situation we were in, and we knew that speaking openly about it, it just wouldn't add up. It wouldn't make sense to other people, family members and friends, because it's like, basically you were, I don't want to say you were living a facade, but it kind of was a facade, because it's like, you were living way above your means, overexerting yourself, overextending yourself, presenting yourself in a certain way when you couldn't afford it or sustain it. So, I think that
But you didn't even, it seems like you didn't even, the judgment, you didn't even want to bring that on for the external agencies, because obviously they're not your family or friends, but even just the mentality of, you know, thinking, okay, who can help me? I think I'm recognizing in you, why I'm kind of mentioning this, is that sometimes we block ourselves, you know, because we're so like, I want to keep it in the family, keep it to ourselves, you know, don't get any help, because, you know, you put yourself into this mess. We need to just work hard and get out of this, and we'll, you know, it's very
much how I did, which I wish in hindsight I didn't do, because those services are available. It doesn't cost you anything, and they don't judge you. That literally, they don't. I know so many people that have gone through those systems and have been able to get debt written off and have been able to get that support on their debt-free journey. And I just wish, to be honest, back then I didn't even know about these services. So it wasn't even a case of I knew they were there and didn't want to access them. I just didn't know they existed. And to be fair, I didn't look into it, because I didn't think, like, where do you go when you're in debt? Like, if I didn't know about the debt-free community and I didn't know about all these services now, back then, I just didn't even know that was a thing, that you could get help or anybody could advise you. I just thought, you made your bed, you lie in it. And that's kind of the approach I took.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even the things that you're saying, like, you make your bed, you lie in it, you work hard to get money. Like, it's all these kind of the mental programming that we've been taught and we've learned growing up, you know. Okay, so you guys embarked on your debt-free journey, which you are now on the other side of, thankfully, we give thanks for that. What were some of the first things, what are some of the first steps you took, and what are some of the things that you would do differently? So it's kind of a two-part question.
Okay, so some of the things that we did was, well, the main thing that we had to do is look at our financial situation. So we had to kind of find out how much debt we exactly had, because like I said before, I thought I had about £22,000 at max worth of debt. So to find out it was £36,000, that in itself was an eye-opener. And then another thing that we had to do is really get a hold of our finances. So understand really how much money we had coming in on a monthly basis and how much money was going out. And now that might seem like such a simple thing to do, but up until that point, it wasn't something we had tracked or really paid close attention to. It was just like, you know, the bills come out at a certain time of the month and it just goes out, and then we kind of spend whatever is left. And then, we went on to the next payday. And it was only when we had said that, no, we're going to commit to paying this debt off, that we had to really get in front of our money and be proactive planning for that money in advance, as opposed to kind of just spending it and, you know, dealing with the consequences after. So that was one thing we had to do. Creating a budget was something we had to do too. We had to create a conscious spending plan. So a plan for every single penny and pound of our money, like we had to do that. A lot of things we did as well was cutting back on our expenses. So before, when I was in debt, I used to shop at Tesco and I used to have online delivery sent to my house every week. But when we decided that we were going to commit to paying this debt off, I literally had to stop that Tesco online delivery. As much as it was so convenient having my groceries dropped to me on my doorstep, I needed to pay that debt off. And I knew that that was one area, because it was a variable expense, that I could actually do something about. So literally it was a case of looking at all our expenses. The fixed expenses we couldn't do much about at that time, but our variable expenses, those expenses that we could do something about. So it was just literally cutting them down as much as we could. And what we ended up finding out on that debt-free journey is that a lot of our money that we thought we didn't have, it wasn't that we didn't have it, we were just wasting a lot of it. So like just little things, like on Sunday, I go to church, and I used to go to church twice on a Sunday. So I'll go to church in the morning, then we'll go out in the afternoon. So go out to eat, and then we'll go back to church later on. And it's like in the afternoon, every Sunday, going out to eat, you just threw the mouse. That's added up quickly. And we're not going to McDonald's. We're going to restaurants.
Yeah. So
down here, £70 here every week. It adds up quickly. So those were the kind of things that we literally had to just cut out of our spending plan, which was hard at the time, because going from being available to friends all the time to now saying no every week, it's like, okay, what's going on with you guys? Do you know what I mean?
But
it had to be done because we needed to pay that debt off.
And you speak a lot now about, so you did that. How long did that take you following that plan? And did you stick to the plan like religiously in order to get yourself?
We stuck to it. We literally lived, not the most fun life. And that's something, so you asked actually what I would do differently this time. And I think I would allow for us to still live life on that journey, because I think we were just too focused on paying off the debt, which is important. And Dave Ramsey is like that. He's quite radical with that whole debt repayment thing. He's like, you know, you made your bed, you lie in it. Like, you just need to suck some stuff up until you paid it all off, kind of thing.
Wow.
That's kind of, his theme, because it's like, you know, you were stupid and spent all that money. You paid stupid tax. That's what he says. So you paid,
Yeah.
So now you need to like deal with the consequences. And that's how we were for those years. But now looking back, I'm like, it wasn't necessary to really deprive ourselves for that long, because those 2 years with our kids, for example, we can never get those 2 years back. So it's important to still live your life and enjoy your life, but just be intentional with how you manage your finances. I think that was the key takeaway, and that's the key thing that I wish that I'd done differently back then. It was still enjoy a little bit, and focus on paying off the debt rather than just focus on paying off the debt and not enjoy life.
Yeah. And also, because you, like you mentioned, you having two children, now you've got a third one.
Yeah.
So you obviously during the pregnancy, you're probably still coming through that period, because it took you, I think it was 2 years to pay off the debt. Yeah. So, okay. So in terms of the main takeaways, then you could offer maybe for anybody listening, what would you advise them to do in terms of, okay, I'm in this X amount of debt. What are the main things that you would suggest for them to do? I know you've spoken on your channel about different tracking tools, and actually one of the main things I would love you to speak on is living within your means as well. You speak a lot about that.
100%. Yeah, I think the most important thing I would say, if you want to pursue this debt free journey, is to know that it's going to take sacrifice. So like I was saying a minute ago about the fact that, you know, I wish I had enjoyed on my journey. Yes, that is true. But you do need to make a lot of sacrifices to reach that debt-free goal, because unless you make those sacrifices, you may still get there, to be fair, but it may take you 10 years instead of five if you don't make those sacrifices, and you're going to pay a lot of interest by doing it that way. So I'd say it's very important to kind of have a plan as well. I think anyone wanting to go on a debt-free journey, I would say to have a plan. So have a plan and have a goal that you're trying to work towards, and take that goal and break it down into bite-sized goals. Because I think when you have this debt, let's say, for example, you have £10,000 worth of debt, thinking, oh my gosh, I need to pay back this £10,000, that is overwhelming and that feels like an impossible task to achieve. But if you take that £10,000 and maybe break it into £1,000, every 3 months I want to pay it off, and track your progress. So I use a lot of different tracking sheets, and that's what I use on my debt-free journey, and it gives you that sense of achievement every time you're able to color in a block or color in a circle on the tracker, depending on the tracker which you use. It gives you that sense of achievement, and you can kind of see your progress. You can see that actually I'm getting closer to reaching this goal. But I think when you don't visualize it, or you don't have any kind of cues, visual cues, it seems like, you know, you're just doing this but it's not really working, or I'm not really getting anywhere. That way you're literally able to visualize your progress. And there was something else you said that I should mention. I've forgotten what you said, sorry.
You said just in terms of living within your means, I've seen you speak a lot about on your Instagram. So that's, I think that's, especially now, you know, because of Instagram and other social media platforms, so many people are trying to keep up with this luxurious lifestyle or this particular way of living, you know, for the gram or whatever it might be, even if you probably don't realise that you're doing it. What does that look like in terms of living within your means? Like, say, okay, you earn, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 combined income. What does that look like for you? Because you've mentioned two terms which I only usually hear with regards to interest rates. You've mentioned variable and fixed. So in terms of variable and fixed, then what does that look like, living within your means?
Okay, so with living within your means, I like to even say live below your means, because
living below your means
is not even going to get you to that financial goal. Because if, let's say, for example, you earn £3,000 and you're spending within that £3,000, you're still not going to have that extra money to put towards things. But if you go below your means, so if your budget, the total income of your household is £3,000 a month, for example, try and find a way to budget to £2,000. So then you have £1,000 to put towards paying off debt, saving, investing, whatever that other financial goal is. But try not to spend everything you earn, because that's something that most people do. Because most of us, or a lot of people, should I say, is you wait for payday. You shouldn't really ever try and be in that position where you have to wait onto payday, because there should be something that you have set aside, kind of thing, that will tie you through. Because I like to ask people this question when I work with them one-on-one, is if today was your last day to get paid, how long could you survive without being paid? So, or even if tomorrow you were due to get paid and your employer didn't pay you, would you still be okay? Would you still be able to live? And that question really stifles people, because it's like, oh, actually, that's when you realize how not secure financially you are. Because I think when we have a secure job, or when we're in some kind of secure employment, we think that, you know, I'm okay, like I've got my job, I'm going to get paid next week, and we kind of expect it to come through. But should the worst happen, I mean, this pandemic has shown, like, literally, never say never. You don't know what is around the corner.
Exactly.
And so it's important to do what you can to protect yourself financially. So going back to what we were saying about the fixed and variable costs, I think when we look at our finances, there are some expenses that are fixed. So things that are fixed would be your rent, for example, council tax. These are bills that you have to pay regardless of how you feel, that these things need to be paid. But things like food, things like even travel to an extent, those are variable costs. Because you can argue that travel isn't variable, because I need to get to work. But do you need to get the train? Can you maybe cycle? Can you maybe even get the bus? So these are the things that you start to look at and find ways to reduce those expenses, so that you can free up some money, so that you're not spending all your income and you have some variable, I mean, you have some money left to play with and some wriggle room, and you're not literally living at your means. You have a bit of buffer. So I think having those fixed expenses, and those are things as well, actually, that you can later on look at your fixed expenses. That is something that can't be changed straight away, which is why I say focus on the variable expenses first, because those are things that straight away you could be like, okay, I'm going to cut my Sky, I'm going to cut my Netflix, I'm going to cancel Amazon Prime. No,
yeah, I just sounds like, like sacrifice.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. And that's
sometimes
thing.
You have to do that. Yeah,
you have to do that, and you don't have to cut everything. But do you need Disney Plus, plus Netflix, plus Sky all in the same household? Do you know what I mean? Or do you need the multi-user version?
Yeah.
For example, maybe you could just get the single one, which is a bit cheaper. Or Amazon Prime, do you actually need your item the next day? Can you not just get free delivery on certain items and just wait a couple of days to get it? So these are the things that you really want to consider when it comes to variable expenses, so that your variable expenses go from being £1,000 a month to £500 a month, just by being more conscious with where you spend that money. And then fixed expenses, that's something you can then look at later down the line. That's not something you can change overnight. So with renting, for example, let's say you're renting a one-bed studio apartment. Do you actually need to have a one-bed studio apartment right now if you have so much debt that you're paying off? Maybe it might be worth making that sacrifice for a year or two and get a flat share. So you get a room in somebody's house, and then that extra money that you have, you can now put towards paying off your debt. So it's like literally looking at your finances and seeing what you can do to kind of free up money to put towards paying off debt or reaching those financial goals. But I think when we don't have a plan and we're not conscious of our money, that money literally just goes missing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, those are some really excellent tips. And I hope that, you know, some people listening, including myself, will be find this, because it's the difference between, you know, hearing the information and actually applying it and actually looking at it and, you know, physically. And I know that you've released something recently as well. Tell us about that. That can help us, for anybody listening who wants a little bit more help. Tell us a bit about your recent publication.
Yay. So I literally a couple of weeks
I love ago, the big I'm, smile on your face, by the way. Just like this lights you up. You're on your purpose.
I'm really excited to finally have it out there. I wrote my own ebook, my first ebook. This is something that's been in the pipeline for like literally over a year. I've wanted to do it for so long. But number one, finding the time to sit down and write it. And then number two, having that imposter syndrome, thinking, who are you to be writing a whole book? Those are the kind of things that kind of stopped me and made me procrastinate for so long. Yeah. Before doing it, but pleased to say that I've finally done it. I've written my ebook. It's called How I Paid Off £36,000 Debt. Quite self-explanatory. In the book, I basically talk about the 10 steps in which I took to achieve debt freedom. So I talk about a bit about my story and just the things that we did, the practical steps that we took to pay off that debt, so that if anybody is on their own debt-free journey and just looking for kind of a strategy and a system to follow, then that book basically gives you that roadmap to paying off your debt.
Yeah, excellent. So you've heard that, guys. Okay, so where can they get hold of your practical steps in your ebook?
My ebook's available for sale on my website, tolufrimpong.com. So literally head to tolufrimpong.com, and on the menu bar, there's a tab that says ebook. In fact, it's even on the homepage, to be fair. So as soon as you land on my website, you can see the ebook cover. It's bright pink. And you can download your copy from there.
Okay. One question I didn't ask you, actually, how important, because you mentioned on your website about your actual financial goals and you actually outlined them. So you've mentioned three, you know, you want to create multiple streams of active and passive income. You want to increase your savings. I don't know if they might have changed, but how often do we need to be making financial goals? Obviously, we need to be making them and some of us aren't. But how often would you say that you need to be looking at those and revising them?
I think it's important to have goals, because I think without a plan, what are you actually aiming to? Is I like setting goals. I set them annually, and then I also set them quarterly, and then I set them monthly. And I share my goals actually over on my Instagram page. So every month you see on Instagram, I have my goals that I have for the month relating to the business and what I'm trying to do. And I kind of tick them off during the month and then come back at the end of the month and report on my results. And I like to do this because I like having a plan and have something that I'm working towards, but then equally having something to measure myself against, because I think without having a plan, I don't then know whether I've succeeded or not, because I wasn't working towards anything. But I think being intentional and having a goal, it gives me focus. It gives me something that I'm working on. And that's what I do. I kind of, I love setting goals. I think it's very important to have a goal. Very important to have goals. I think don't have too many goals, but definitely have goals and have goals that you're working towards and make them specific, measurable. What's the acronym? SMART.
So,
specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely.
Timely.
Like, whenever you're setting goals, make sure it covers those five areas so that you actually have a measurable goal that you're working towards. Otherwise, if it's quite wishy-washy or quite vague, you're not going to actually achieve it because you haven't given yourself something substantial that you're working towards.
Excellent. Okay. And why did you start this journey? Why did you decide to go on YouTube and Instagram and share this? What was your personal motivation? So I think it's important for us to have a why, but what was your motivation? What was your why?
So for me, it was accountability, I think, was the biggest reason why I started my blog and started my Instagram page, because I wanted to document my financial journey, because I know myself and I know how I am. Like, it was one thing getting out of debt, because that was the goal, to pay off the debt and become debt free. But then our next goal after that was to become mortgage free. We'd love to pay off our mortgage. But whereas with debt, it's like quite intense. I need to pay off that debt. It's something that if I don't do it, it's going to be a problem. Whereas with this paying off the mortgage, like, nobody's forcing me to overpay my mortgage. If I don't overpay it, it doesn't matter. So it would be very easy for me to kind of fall back into my old lifestyle and my old habits. But having this page and tracking my progress and sharing what I'm doing publicly, it kind of helps keep me in line with where I'm trying to get to. But then equally also, I'm able to help other people on their own journeys. And that's something that I didn't anticipate when I started. I didn't realize that by me sharing my journey, sharing my experiences, it was then going to help so many other people on their own financial journeys. And then as a byproduct, basically, of me sharing my journey online, I started working with people one-on-one with their finances and helping them with their budgets and helping them with a plan to pay off their debt as well. So that's kind of something that has come from doing it. And that wasn't something that I saw when I started the page. But I think just sharing, just helping other people on their journeys has kind of led me down a path that I'm on today.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, I didn't even know you offer that service. So that's something that you, if anybody needs an extra hand, they can come to you one-to-one and you'll go through with them and do the budgeting, all that stuff that, or whatever they need help with. Okay, excellent. Excellent. Okay, so as you're doing it, you're learning, you know, you're sharing, you're developing the business as you go along. What's your biggest blessing, do you think, since doing this? What was the biggest thing that you thought, this is really worthwhile?
Oh, the DMs, my days. Like, some of the messages that I've received from people on my page is mind-blowing. I'm like, wow, I didn't realise that just by me sharing my truth and sharing my experiences, it could have that much impact on somebody else. Literally a DM that I got from one of my followers on Instagram the other day. She was like, Tolly, you literally changed my life. Which I said, you saved my life. I was like, I saved your life, really? She's like, no, you don't understand. Like, ever since I've come across your channel, I've been able to start budgeting. I'm literally almost debt-free. Next month, I'm going to make my final payment and I'm going to be debt-free. And it's all thanks to you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's not thanks to me because you actually did the work. But I got what she was saying, the sentiment. And that obviously, it was me telling her the process or telling her the path to take. And she just took that path and literally ran with it. And those kind of messages are the biggest blessing, because it's like, wow, because that's what we're here for at the end of the day, isn't it? To make impacts on others. So to be able to impact somebody else in such a remarkable way. And she's got a daughter, so she's now passing that information on to her daughter, who's of age, where she's working as well. So it's like, now you're helping people to transform their finances generationally. So it's incredible.
Wow, beautiful. I literally just got goosebumps. That's like confirmation, like, yes, this is so powerful. I'm so happy to see the journey, happy to be getting the information as well that you're putting out there on your YouTube channel. And as you said, you know, people are responding and people are actually in need of what you're providing, so that, you know, your purpose is being fulfilled, you know.
Yes,
so well done to you. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, before that you've just spoken about purpose and all of that stuff and the influence that you're having. What does owning it mean to you in your own words?
Oh gosh, owning it. So to me, I think owning it means just being yourself in your entirety. So being the unapologetic version of yourself. So I think a lot of times we kind of conform to society or other people externally, their impressions of us or their expectations of us, or we apologize for not meeting up to the mold or not measuring up. I think owning it is literally owning yourself, your flaws, your insecurities, your inadequacies, like owning every part of you, because the negative, the positive, all of it makes you who you are. So it's like, I think own it and really embrace it, because people connect with people at the end of the day. And I think people connect with real people. So really own your truth and your identity. And I think you'll attract your people. So I think the more I find that I own who I am, the more people resonate to me. And that's not me trying to sound big-headed. Oh my gosh, that sounded so self-absorbed.
No, not at all. It's real talk.
The more that I just be me, the more I attract like-minded people and attract my audience. So it's like, own it, own your truth. Like, yes, people say I talk too fast. People have things to say, and some of the quirks that you may think are negative, other people see it as a positive. So it's like, you just have to own every a part of you, because that's what makes you you. Like, there's only one you. Think about it. In this whole world, only you are you. And yeah, I think more of us need to embrace that, because that's what sets us apart at the end of the day from everybody else.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful answer. Beautiful. Oh. Absolutely love that. Yeah, no, and you are proof that owning your authenticity, and it doesn't matter what people say. People have always got something to say in feedback or negativity or whatever it may be. But the fact that you're touching lives, the fact that you're developing, because you won't be the same person or doing it the same way this year as when you started, or even next year from now. You'll always continually be progressing and growing. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely well done. So Tolly, where can people get hold of you if they want to find and keep in touch with you and your Team Money Talks and all the rest of the stuff that you're doing?
Gosh, yeah, I'm everywhere. So I'm on YouTube, so you can subscribe to my YouTube channel, Tolly Frimpong. And I'm also on Instagram with my name as well, Tolly Frimpong. And I also have a blog, which I send a weekly newsletter from as well. So if you want to subscribe to my newsletter, mail in, do that. Via my blog as well. So yeah,
excellent. And that's her marketing hat on, you know, just simple and easy. Tolly Frimpong. You can find her, get in touch with her, guys. Absolutely brilliant. Her YouTube, her Instagram lives are just always
life brilliant.